head cheese.
All right, it's 2 o'clock. It's proverbial coal in your stocking time for many. It's the holiday. Common gutted it out. PA gutted it out. Where's Hi-Fi? Funny. He's got a little one. He can be, you know what? Be with your family. That's what I'm here for. Dave Sinekin, the head cheese. For the next 3 hours, I'm believing the final local show of the day today. Ryan Donaldson by my side. It's become a Christmas time tradition for us, has it not?
I think this has got to be year five. I was trying to look back to see how long it's been, Davey, but I think we're coming up on year five, if not longer.
Feels like it. I mean, I don't mean like it's five.
it's a tradition unlike any other, though.
Believe it or not, this is the 25th Christmas for me on The Fan.
Wow. Think about that.
On this day, Christmas Eve Day, 1994, for many, you know, a day of infamy, because it marked my first time on the AM 1130 airwaves as at the time we had like sports update guys. And I just moved here from Chicago and tried out, and boom, it's Christmas Eve. Nobody else wants to work. We'll give you your first shot. The rest is history. 25 years later, Sinekin and Donaldson hanging out between now and five. It's a 3-hour tour on a sort of pseudo common man program. Bumper to bumper program. We'll get you through it, because as we always talk about on Christmas Eve afternoon, this is, for many of you, desperation time. You're circling the Rosedale parking lot looking for a spot. You're going up and up in the Mall of America ramp, knowing that it's not going to be pretty in there. It's procrastinator 101. You've waited too long, and now you pay the price. So that's what we're here for today, is to make what's likely a difficult time a little bit better. Because, I mean, I'm not a shopper. I'm not like PA, where the Mall of America is his happy place. Frankly, I don't understand that. I mean, to each his own. I'm glad he has a happy place. If he wants to be creepy shopper guy in the knit cap handing out gift cards to strangers, wonderful. Couldn't imagine something I'd rather less do than that.
See, I kind of like the Mall of America. I like the vibe over there.
Well, nothing against MOA.
I like shopping in general, see, I guess.
And then for me, I'll let my fingers do the talking every day of the week. The internet was invented for people like me that have no interest in walking through malls and dealing with lines and people. It's just not me. So many of you are doing that now, and we'll try to keep you entertained / informed over the next 3 hours. We don't have a robust guest list, as you might expect. It's I don't want to bother people on Christmas Eve. I did, though, I have limits. I did reach out to Johnny Athletic, because the Timberwolves put together one of the most unlikely performances of the season last night. And I thought, you know, if you've got some time, any time during this 3-hour block, love to get your thoughts on what we saw in OKC last night. And, of course, he did not disappoint. Johnny Athletic will join the program at the bottom of the hour at 2:30 to talk Wolves, but I also can't wait to talk about the absolutely fantastic story he wrote about Devin George, Minneapolis' own Devin George, 11-year NBA career, Minneapolis guy, and the great things he is doing for his community in his life. And I want to talk to John about that great story. You'll find it in The Athletic, which is where John now works, in case you did not know that. Johnny Athletic joins at 2:30. He will be our only guest. I will open it up to, hey, any bumper-to-bumper regulars listening? Pat Kessler? Paul Majors? You know, iHeartRadio in L.A.? Anybody wants to call in the hotline? Wait, what do we call it now? The Whiting Clinic LASIK and Cataract Hotline.
You nailed it.
I've had LASIK. I've had cataract. I've had it all. I have readers now. None of this happened back in 94 when I started on The Fan. Such as life, such as aging. Russo, no need to call in, because I can't fake it. You know, when did he fill in? Was it Friday for Bumper?
Yeah.
I'm listening on iHeart, and he's given the guest list. You know, and it's one hockey conversation after the other. And I'm a diehard bumper-to-bumper listener. I listen every day. And Russo's great. And for puckheads, state of hockey, I get it. You're in Lala. I mean, this is as good as it gets. I couldn't turn it off fast enough. I just, you know, if I'm home looking to take an afternoon nap, I'll turn that on, but that's just not me. So this will be the anti-Russo program, and Russo, you're welcome to call in. Maybe I'll take an extended bathroom break. You can opine about your favorite hockey team. I'm guessing that won't happen. So here's what I do want to do. We'll talk to Johnny Athletic at 2:30. We're going to do a top four at 4 since we're off the air at 5, and frankly, it kills a segment.
Yeah, exactly right.
And so why wouldn't we do
that? And we're one item short because I can't bring up the Wild.
Correct. So we'll stop at 4.
So we go at 4. There you go.
Just got a text from Spencer Tollickson. Yes, you count as a bump regular. I'd love you to call in anytime. Let's see. Anytime in the 3 o'clock hour. We're doing on-air production.
Perfect.
Spencer's the greatest ever.
I'll keep an eye on the hotline.
Because not only can we talk Big Ten basketball, which after the NFL is right there for me, NBA falls below college hoops, Big Ten hoops in particular, and Spencer's a fellow Packer fan, so we can both commiserate about the meaningless games the Packers are closing the season with. So yeah, maybe Spencer in the 3 just caught my eye as the text came in. And then we said top 4 at 4, we're off at 5. It'll be a Talker Monday on a Monday. We'll take calls throughout the show. Those of you out and about that want to weigh in on whatever we're talking about, that's open all day long. I went through the playoff situation, the scenarios, and I've got it figured out. I'm going to come up. We'll do this in the 3. My complete playoff predictions, granted, nothing set in stone, but I'll start with what I think is going to happen this coming weekend. And as it stands right now, the two teams I've got in the AFC title game are not in the playoffs right now. I'll just leave that teaser out there.
That's a hell of a tease.
So we'll do that in the 3 o'clock hour. Another thing that I know we've done every year that we've been doing this at Christmas time, whether it's Christmas Eve or I think it typically has been Christmas Eve lately. I used to work Christmas Day, but for the last few years, I think ABBA just goes all syndicated on Christmas Day. I get that. But it's been Christmas Eve tradition for Ryan and me. So here's the deal. My family, grandma always takes the family to somewhere warm right after Christmas, 5, 6, 7 days. And I stay behind, take care of the dog, make sure I don't miss my first Packer preview in 23 years, and let them have fun with the cousins and the aunt and the uncle, and they all have fun. And I'm by myself watching bowl games and too much Netflix. And I always throw this out, and we'll do it again today, via email. Bradshaw and Bryant inbox booth at KFAN.com. Netflix suggestions, Amazon Prime suggestions. Do people listen to watch Hulu? Are there enough people where you throw that out there too?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I think that counts.
All right, so any streaming suggestions for not just me, who will pretend I'm back in my 30s and single and living that life for 6 days, but anybody else that may have some time without work and looking for a recommendation for a good series, a good special, something to watch. I'll take recommendations throughout the afternoon, booth at KFAN.com. And in the radio biz, we call it sprinkling it through the program. And I'm not going to do a hardcore segment on, top 10 things to watch on Netflix right now. But we'll sprinkle it throughout the day, and hopefully we'll throw out a few that catch your ear, and you'll find something interesting to watch over the holiday season. You're heading somewhere warm.
I am. I can't wait.
You're giddy. You're like bopping up and down in your seat right now.
That's exactly right.
Because not only are you going somewhere warm,
yeah,
but it's a buddy's wedding.
Yeah, we're going to Cabo, Mexico for a friend's wedding. So shout out to my buddy Mike.
Mike, congratulations. You're doing it in style. I don't know you, so I wasn't expecting an invitation, so don't worry about it. But best of luck in your future endeavors with your lovely bride. And man, that's an okay place to have a wedding right there.
I've never been, but I very much look forward to it.
Nor have I. So that's what we're going to go with. I think we'll have an open segment here coming up before we talk to Johnny Athletic. I want to weigh in on the Wolves game. I watched a good chunk of it last night. Just such an unexpected performance by our favorite basketball team after going 0-12 against Western Conference teams. You're up against the number one team, at least via record. OKC was number one heading into last night, and what do you know? Aaron Wiggins woke up. Did I say Aaron Wiggins?
I think you meant Andrew.
Andrew Wiggins woke up. I'm thinking Aaron Rodgers, I think, in my back of my head after watching him throw it up and down the field yesterday. Yes, Andrew Wiggins woke up last night and put together a performance that, frankly, we've been waiting about 5 years to see. So we'll come back. We'll talk some NBA. Phone lines available. Johnny Athletic, bottom of the hour. Senekin and Donaldson in for a bump and guard. Hanging out till 5. Merry Christmas. Back with much more right after these.
It's a Purple Monday on The Fan, presented by Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Minnesota.
Back 217. We're covering all our bases this holiday season, right? A little Christmas music spun, a little klezmer style. Senekin in for in for Common for now. Taking it through up until 5 o'clock. Live programming on the Leader. Senekin with Ryan Donaldson by my side, hanging out till 5. Next segment, Johnny Athletic to talk both Timberwolves and the latest from former hoopster Devin George and the great story Johnny wrote on The Athletic that posted this morning. I lied. I said I would talk Wolves. I really want to talk Purple. We'll talk Wolves with Johnny in the next segment. So I didn't catch much of PA's show today. But wait, before I do that, early Netflix recommendations flying in to the Bradshaw and Bryant inbox. If you missed the open, I always do this on Christmas Eve. Streaming suggestions for those that have time on their hands. First few that are in. Hang on. Kevin is recommending Bird Box on Netflix. That's the Sandra Bullock horror. I guess it's horror.
So I just started that last night, and I started too late. I made the mistake because I started drifting off.
Oh.
It is insane, though.
Okay, but here's the thing.
I'm going to go finish it for sure tonight.
But I'm a wuss. I'm not a... my wife loves scary movies. I hate scary movies. Fortunately, one of my sons is into them, so she can watch with a kid.
Uh-huh.
But I don't think it's for me. I just don't want to be frightened. I like suspense. I'm a huge Hitchcock guy. Like I took a course in college for. I own like 50 Hitchcock. I like suspense.
Yeah, I get that. Like I think that there are some cheap kind of scary movies where they just rely too much on the jump scares.
Yep.
This I don't think is that. Like it's scary in a sense of, oh my god, what's happening to the world?
Yeah.
But it's not scary like you got somebody jumping out of a dark corner and then all of a sudden you jump out of your seat.
I mean, I saw a trailer, and I immediately said, no, I'm not. That's
just not for you.
Not going to happen.
Fair enough.
That's Bird Box, Sandra Bullock. That's on Netflix. Sean is recommending Last Kingdom, 3 seasons in. However, I will couch that recommendation with this. Well, he says great show, which is nice, although I don't know if he means me or Last Kingdom. I'm going to guess he means Last Kingdom.
Maybe both.
Then he says, can't stomach the basketball talk. That sport is unwatchable. So I don't know that my views and Sean's views are going to really align too well. So I'm not going to recommend, I'm not going to give it a 4-star recommendation from Sean, because I don't think Sean and I, we couldn't hang out. Anybody that says basketball is unwatchable, we can't hang out. I mean, you'll get over it. I'll get over it. Just how it is. Then another Kevin is offering Altered Carbon on Netflix, a Blade Runner-esque sci-fi detective show. Are you familiar with it?
I am not.
Altered Carbon.
Semi-intrigued.
Plenty of action, well-casted and produced. I like when I don't just get the title, but what a nice little summary there in about 10 words. Very Blade Runner-esque sci-fi detective show with plenty of action, well-casted and produced. Nordo's giving it thumbs up.
Okay.
See, I thought Norda was working across the glass. He's actually listening while he's working. I appreciate that. He's also, Kevin's also recommending The Vietnam War, Ken Burns production. Ken Burns is an amazing filmmaker. And yeah, that sounds, well, it sounds a little dark and you know, not real full of positivity.
Sure.
But a necessary part of our history.
Definitely.
And I lived through it as a youngster. You were not even a gleam in your mom's eye at that time. But if you like Ken Burns' work, and I think he's fantastic, that's I didn't even know that was there. So that's a good one. But that's not one you're just going to like plow through and watch all 18 hours, right?
Probably not.
Watch an hour of that, then maybe lighten it up with the Adam Sandler special or something. And
that's
then,
a great idea.
Then come back and give it an hour. You can't go hardcore in Vietnam War. You'll be... Well, you'll be drinking heavily.
A little too much doom and gloom, for
sure. Yeah, maybe so. Maybe so. All right, I've already got terrible clock management because we have to get out of this one early because we've got an extended break with, what do we have, a Gophers?
Golden Gopher Daily Update with Mike Grimm coming up.
There we go. That's coming up in the next break. But quickly on the Vikes, because I didn't see a minute of it. Here's how it works in my house on Sundays when the Packers and Vikes are playing at the same time. I'm on the main level. Son Jackson, the big Viking fan, is down below watching the Vikes, and usually he'll run up when something great happens and let me know. It was, I mean, I had to almost check to see if he was okay. I hadn't heard from him the entire first half, and that's very unusual. And then all of a sudden, and I saw the score was like 9-0, and then it was 9-7, and then I hear the padding up the stairs, and Jackson flying in to inform me about the Hail Mary. And finally, with a grin on his face, he had news to report about his favorite purple-tinged football team. So I didn't see anything. I know the Stefanski project didn't get off to a great start. What was it, 4 3-and-outs?
Yep, 4 3-and-outs to start the game.
It was Lem Barney across the ball for the Lions. Was he playing cornerback? Was Alex Karras? I mean, who?
Yeah, he wasn't on the field that I was aware of.
And Ziggy Ansah wasn't out there either.
Nope.
So what was your perspective of the slow start offensively? That surprised me a bit.
Yeah, there was a bunch of penalties early, so I think that kind of hurt us. But then also, I think that we're just being a little bit too conservative. I think that would be, if I had to choose one word to describe it all, it would probably be that we were being too conservative. Too much, you know, too many runs, kind of predictable runs where you'd go up the middle or try to stretch one out to the outside that would go for negative yardage. Mm-hmm. You get, you know, into second and long, third and long situations, and Cousins didn't really have the gall to throw the ball downfield, it felt like. He was getting a decent amount of time, but then the Lions pass rush would eventually get to him. And I think there was just a little maybe just nervousness going on, just trying to be a little too safe. And then once things kind of broke open, obviously, towards the end of the first half, that's when I think they got more comfortable throwing the ball downfield, and you saw that in the second half. The offense looked like a completely different team.
And you know what? You could say you're making too much of it, but, you know, it's Stefanski's first time calling a game on the road. And,
sure.
You know, just his second game, and, you know, there's a lot to last week with the Dolphins, who are, you know, we know, nothing like a playoff-caliber team, even though the record didn't say that. They were horrible on the road this year, and that was not going to be necessarily a stern test. But that reminds me of what I heard PA say this morning when he called his team surging. You know what? That adjective seems a bit strong for me. Sorry. I mean, you beat the Dolphins and you beat the Lions. Now, I can't wait to talk about the Bears game. It's only Monday, and we've got all week to think about the motivation of the Bears, because that's the storyline is, yes, they can get the 2 seed, but as they're watching the scoreboard, if suddenly the Rams are up 28-0, does that change how they play, knowing that they're going to have to play the Vikes again? My hunch is they're going to come out trying to win the game. But if you beat a Bears team that is motivated and is trying to win the game, then, okay, you're surging. But I'm sorry, granted, I'm the head cheese. Beat the Dolphins and Lions, I can't call you surging. Now, it's positivity abounds. I mean, it looks like things are starting to come together. Could the Vikes get on a roll in the postseason and suddenly become that hot? Yeah, it's possible. I don't know that it's real likely, but yeah, it's possible for sure, especially if the defense is turning a corner, which, again, Dolphins, Lions, two rather offensively challenged teams. I'm not going to go too far with that. But I was curious to get your thoughts on how pumped up you are now that, you know, 2 wins, you're right there in the playoffs. If you beat the Bears on Sunday, what's your positivity scale, 1 to 10?
Well, I right now I'm at about a, I guess if I had to grade it today, I think I'm at about a 7. I think the offense, obviously, we saw it in the first half of the Detroit game, and they've had, you know, glimpses of this like early on in the season too, where it just doesn't feel like there's any kind of rhythm with the offense. So offensively, I'm a little bit worried. That's why I'm not higher on that 1 to 10 scale. But defensively, I'm at about a 9.5. I think that the defense is doing great right now, clicking on all cylinders, and we're relatively healthy, especially if we get Kendricks back by Sunday. So then, as far as that goes, defensively, I'm feeling great. Offensively, I need to see something, and I think you nailed it, Davey. I mean, they got to go and beat the Bears going into the playoffs to have any sort of realistic chance, I think, to make a run into the playoffs. So even if they, you know, somehow lose to the Bears and the Eagles somehow lost to the Redskins, we'd still be in, but I wouldn't be feeling great about it. My confidence level would probably be lower than 7 if they aren't able to beat the Bears next week. We could vault it up to about a 9 if we do. Yeah, win 3 in a row going into the playoffs, I'd feel pretty good about that.
It's fun when your team does start to put things together. Even topsy-turvy year, and then things start to come together, and you feel like you may have a chance. And that's where Purple fans should be right now. We'll talk plenty more Vikings and NFL top of the hour in the 3 o'clock hour. But coming up next, Johnny Athletic joins, talk a little Timberwolves basketball, and the latest from Devin George and what he's doing. Some great things in the city of Minneapolis. Johnny Athletic, kind enough to join us right after the break.
It's time for Johnny Athletic, Johnny Athletic, Johnny Athletic. And he's on the head cheese.
Right. Nice. Nice work there, Ryan.
Thank you.
That was awesome. Dave Sinekin in for Common Slash Bump. Myself and Ryan Donaldson, we are here till 5 and very happy to welcome our guy, Johnny Krasinski, Johnny Athletic, joining us on the Whiting Clinic LASIK and Cataract Hotline. Johnny, Merry Christmas Eve. Thank you so much for giving us a few minutes today, my friend.
Happy holidays to you boys. Thanks for having me.
Of course. I'm excited to talk about what happened in OKC last night, but I really want to start with the story you posted this morning on The Athletic about Devin George, because frankly, you know, I saw the headline and I thought, man, that's a name I haven't thought of Devin George in. No offense, he was a great player, and you think now about a guy drafted from Augsburg by the Lakers in the first round. I mean, when is that going to happen? But you caught us all up on what he has been doing up in his former neighborhood in Minneapolis, and it was just a great story to read, especially this time of year, the way he has given back to his community. Tell me how that story unfolded and how you came across the idea.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Cindy. Yeah, it was, it's a remarkable story because you hear all the time about athletes who, either while they're playing or when they retire, they try and give back to the community. They try and be as active as they can. But I really thought that, you know, in kind of researching and hearing about the work that Devin George has been doing, it takes it to another level. Even from some of the most philanthropic guys out there. I mean, Devin grew up in North Minneapolis in a very rough part of what is a proud community there, but certainly deals with its economic turmoil, its crime rate and drug use and things of that nature. And he grew up about 2 blocks away from one of the toughest areas of that neighborhood. It's on Penn Avenue and Golden Valley Road. And when he was in college, while he was at Augsburg, he was home doing laundry one summer day, and his little brother, 11 years old, and his 12-year-old buddy were out on the porch just playing. And his brother's friend, Byron Phillips, caught a couple of stray bullets from a drive-by shooting, and he was killed. And that kind of served as a huge motivator in Devin's life to try and make a difference and try and help his community. And one of the major, major problems that Minneapolis, that so many big cities across the country are facing, is affordable housing. I mean, for people who make under $50,000 a year, it's almost impossible to find rental property where you're not putting almost your entire paycheck into just covering the rent. And Devin worked with Kevin Garnett, worked with Charles Johnson, a Carolina Panthers guy, and a bunch of other people to build a 47-unit affordable housing complex on that notorious block that that he dealt with and lived so close to as a child. And he's got plans for another one right across the street, 64 units. And what this does is give people in that area some level of stability and gives them a place to go where they can afford it that's really nice and kept up, and that gives people there a little bit of pride in a very tough area. And so, you know, to hear about all the things he has to do to solicit funds, to guarantee loans, to raise the money to do it, I mean, it's truly remarkable work that he's doing.
It is, and that's where I was actually going to go to next, because you really spell it out really well to help us understand. You know, it's one thing to say, you know, I'd love to put an apartment complex right here and, you know, get it done. And then you look at the hoops and the things you have to go through to make that a reality. And it's amazing amount of perseverance that goes with it, because I'm sure that there are roadblocks put up all the time when people are trying to accomplish things from all different directions. And, you know, the fact that, you know, he's almost made his life work, this and putting in countless hours and days and months and years to make it become a reality. And then, you know, you supply us with a couple stories of specific people that have benefited and what it's done before they got this opportunity to now. And it really, I can't even imagine what it makes Devin George feel when he knows the impact he's having on residents of his former neighborhood.
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, he has kind of more of a standard apartment building in Hopkins that he charges regular rent and things like that. And you and I both, Cindy, have seen all of the luxury apartments that are going up along the river downtown, and like all of these places, these high-end places that are charging $2,000-$3,000 a month. You can put those up and you get people in, and it's no problem to cover the mortgage that you need to and the loans that you use to build the place. But with affordable housing, a lot of times some of these people are only paying $200-$300 a month in rent, because that it's kind of adjusted to the income that they have. And so Devin was telling me that it cost about $11-12 million to build that 47 unit apartment complex, but the rent that he pulls in on a monthly basis only covers about $3 million of that mortgage. And so he's got to go to the POLAD Foundation. He's got to go and get tax credits that he's granted through subsidies and sell them to businesses. And so many of these things have these very specific parameters where it's only covering people who make $30,000 or less, or this chunk of money is only covering people who make $50,000 or less. And so it's a dizzying array of hoops that he has to jump through, and he's done this all himself. Now, he's had help and guidance with attorneys and things like that, but he really has thrown himself into this and is personally out there trying to raise the money, trying to secure the subsidies, trying to pitch his projects to civic organizations that deal with these kinds of things. And you know, the amount of work that he has to put into it is just above and beyond anything that I've seen hardly any athletes and even regular people who spend their life doing these affordable housing projects have told me, look, this is an incredibly difficult thing to navigate. And so for Devin to kind of jump into this right after his playing career, it's amazing. And building off that one other point, Dave, is that the building's been open 4 years now. And so what Devin is starting to see are a few families have moved in, have been able to save enough money with the rent controlled housing, and now they're buying places of their own elsewhere. And that's what this whole thing is aimed at, is like letting people come in, live for a little while, get on their feet financially, get their credit ratings up and things like that, and then they can go out and buy their own places. And he's starting to see that, which is, a pretty amazing accomplishment.
It's beyond impressive, and I'm really glad you shined a light on the great work he's doing. And for those that haven't caught it, please check it out at The Athletic. Great job with that story, John. I'm really glad I know what he's doing and what he plans to do. It's a story still being written. It's a really impressive young man. I give him a lot of credit. All right, let's talk basketball. Let's talk NBA. Let's talk Timberwolves. As we turn the page seamlessly, I'm really good with segues. The Wolves gave us very little indication that what happened last night was going to happen last night, especially when you start with the idea that Jeff Teague is out and Derrick Rose is out. So Tyus Jones is your starting point guard, and he's got Russell Westbrook for the night playing the number one team in the West when the game tipped off, the Oklahoma City Thunder. And, you know, I sort of was dipping in and out. It was family game night, and so I didn't watch it hardcore in the first half. They were down pretty big third quarter, and when I happened to flip it back, I just missed a 24-6 run that got them, I think, an 86-80 lead at that time. And I think your guy, Andrew Wiggins, kind of spearheaded it. Tell me what you saw watching that game and maybe what surprised you more than anything else.
Yeah, well, I mean, two things, Cindy, watching that last night was that, one, we know their struggles on the road. They were 0-12 against Western Conference foes on the road before they won last night. Two, Oklahoma City has been playing as well as anybody in the league, you know, since they got off to a rocky start in October, but really November, December have been playing off the charts. Paul George has been unbelievable. Westbrook has been Westbrook. They play great defense. And so you knew that this was going to be tough, even though the Thunder were on a back to back. You know, early on, Wiggins got going, 15 points in the first quarter. They got out to an early lead, which was helpful, gave it all back in the second quarter. And then in the second half, first of all, the bench, Gorgie Jang, Josh Okogie, Dario Saric, a bunch of those guys came in and really were spearheading the run to get back into it, to get up 86-80, played really well because Karl-Anthony Towns was in foul trouble. And then down the stretch, Robert Covington hit a couple of enormous threes. Dario Saric hit a huge one from in the corner to kind of stave off the Thunder. But really, Andrew Wiggins played as hard as I've seen him play in quite some time. And not only did he hit the go-ahead layup in, you know, through contact to put the Wolves up in what was eventually the game-winning shot, but on the ensuing possession for Oklahoma City, he made a great defensive read and cut off Russell Westbrook on a drive to the basket that forced Westbrook to kick it out to Alex Abrines for three rather than taking the shot himself. Abrines misses that shot, and then who grabs the rebound in traffic? Andrew Wiggins. And so, really, it, you know, 30 points, six boards, you know, the kind of Wiggins that you just want to see so much more of, because if he plays like that, the Wolves' ceiling goes up so much higher. It's just the frustrating thing is that kind of performance is sporadic at best from Andrew. They need to get that kind of stuff more from him, but he was terrific last night.
Yeah, six rebounds, five assists, so he actually filled the stat sheet beyond the points. We've read reports that the players have talked amongst themselves about trying to get Wiggins going, that they know their ceiling is higher because his ceiling is higher. But I don't know. I mean, how? I don't know if you reported it or somebody else did that. You know, some heckler in the crowd last night, you know, yelled at him. You know, Butler's better, and I don't know if that gets him going or maybe not. But it just feels like, you know, if he plays in Toronto, he plays better because that's his hometown. If he plays in Cleveland, he's better because that's who traded him. He needs motivation night in, night out, because you do see a performance like last night against that kind of competition, and you say it's in there. Just give it to us 82 times.
Yeah, that's the thing, Dave, is like, he's not, an Anthony Bennett. He's not a Derek Williams. He's not, so many other really high draft picks that just can't do it in this league. We've seen time and time again that he can do it when he's locked in, that he has the ability to be a difference maker. I think I saw a stat last night, maybe posted by Alan Horton, but, he has, 30-point games in his career with the Wolves, and that's fifth in franchise history.
Wow.
And so that shows you, like, he's done this a lot of times. It's not just once or twice. Now, it has to happen more often. There's no question about it, but he has that in him, and he has that capability, and it's a matter of finding the buttons that they have to push or finding what motivates him to get him to do it more often. Do you need 36-5 from him every single night? No, but I think you can expect 23-5-2 every night. That's what you should expect from him because he is making that kind of money and he has that kind of talent. But he needs to show that drive. Now, I will say, Dave, like, I think this season we have seen more from him than maybe people are willing to acknowledge. I think we've seen more from him defensively. I think he's had some really good games since Jimmy was traded. But yeah, when you're making that kind of money, you need it on a nightly basis. And what the Wolves hope is that here's step one towards it. But, you know, everyone's bracing for Wednesday night against Chicago when he has 8 points or 12 points on 3-for-11 shooting and is just a ghost out there. So he's got to prove that he's willing to do this night in and night out. And there's a ton of people inside that locker room that are trying their best to bring it out of him.
Final couple for Johnny Athletic, kind enough to talk to us on a Christmas Eve afternoon. Struggles on the road are real. That was a big one. Obviously, they're now 1-12 on the road against the West. I think just 3-13 overall. They've got 4 of their next 5 on the road. And Trent and I were talking about this on Saturday, that with the big road trip coming up, as miserable as things have been, they could really bury themselves in the West if they don't start to win some games away from Target Center. And with 4 out of 5 coming up, this was certainly a nice springboard. We did read that Chris Hine had it, that they played some top golf in Oklahoma City, little team bonding time to just maybe work out some stuff that might be going on between each other, a chance to relax and have a beer or two and watch each other try to swing a golf club. Can that kind of bonding, followed up by a big unexpected win, provide a springboard for a team that's vastly searching for some kind of springboard to make this season relevant? Otherwise, we know this organization can go in a lot of different directions if they can't find a way to sneak into the postseason.
Yeah, I mean, I think it can. We'll see if it does. But yes, I mean, one of the things that you have not seen from this group in the last couple of years are those group activities, those bonding things. And chemistry is really important in the NBA, as you know, Cindy. I mean, these guys have to play together. They don't have to be best buddies, but they do have to like playing together, respect each other, and be on the same page. And I do think they've made some big strides in that area since Buckets was traded. But certainly, we hadn't seen like a full team outing like this. And I think that's encouraging. I think that means that there's leadership on the team that is noticing things go haywire and say, all right, how do we fix this? What can we do to change things up? And so they tried that, and one night into it, it looks like it's a pretty good move. Now they have to sustain this kind of effort, that kind of intensity, and that kind of connectedness. But it's certainly better than the alternative of them just kind of sitting around, staring at each other and waiting for something good to happen. We know that they have talent on the team, but what has always held these guys back is that they had not played together. And so maybe that's the first step. But again, a long ways away from showing that was a real turning point and not just a flash in the pan. But certainly you like to see those things start to happen. And just a recognition that, okay, we're not doing what we need to be doing. Let's figure out a way to change things up and try something else.
The fan has learned the Wolves will not play on Christmas Day. So happy for you. You get the time off to enjoy the family and enjoy a holiday, and I hope you do that. Thank you so much for giving us a few minutes, and look forward to chatting down the road.
Appreciate you having me, Cindy. Just a quick plug. We have a sale today. If you want to read that Devin George piece, it's theathletic.com/ho-ho-hoops for $2.99 a month. It'll get you free access to that and a bunch of other great stories. So thanks for supporting us, Cindy. Everyone, have a great holidays, and I'll be talking to everyone soon.
Sounds good. Thanks, Johnny. I cannot promote that stronger. Think about it. $2.99 a month. That's a drink at Starbucks or Caribou or Dunkin'.
Less even, yeah.
I didn't even know you were still on. Yes, it is. It's for $3 a month. I mean, for one coffee a month, you are you've got all the content. Not just Johnny and Russo and the local guys, but some of the great for me like Seth Davis and the college basketball stuff. It's if you love sports, I don't know why you wouldn't do it. So yes, we will definitely promote your site. It's definitely worth it. Have a great Christmas, John.
All right, thanks, guys. Take it easy.
Yep, John Krasinski, Johnny Athletic, kind enough to join us. We'll step away. Spencer Tollickson confirmed for 3:30 to talk some college hoop and maybe a smidge about the Pac's future, maybe his head coach preference. When we come back, I'm going to let you know not only what's going to happen in Week 17 in the NFL, how the playoffs are going to break down, who will take home the Lombardi Trophy. I mean, you don't even have to watch in January. I've just opened up your January to do what you will. But I'll let you know what I think is going to happen. And again, my tease right now, and I reserve the right to change my mind after watching Week 17. But as it stands right now, the two teams I have in the AFC Championship game currently are not in the playoff field. Ooh. My predictions on the NFL. Coming up next on The Fan.
To listen back to a podcast of today's show, visit the Common Man channel on the iHeartRadio app or go to KFAN.com.
Back 3 o'clock. It's not quite Marvin Gaye, but it does cover all our bases this holiday season. Dave Sinekin sitting in, well, officially now for Bumper to Bumper with Barrero, taking off the holiday. It's Sinekin and Donaldson. We are here for a couple more hours. We will sign off at 5 o'clock today and get on with holiday festivities. But thanks for spending part of your frantic shopping afternoon with us. We just got off with Johnny Athletic. And coming up at the bottom of the hour, Spencer Tollickson, kind enough to check in with us. I threw out the bat signal for bump regulars and said, we're not lining up a lot of guests. It's Christmas Eve, but if anybody's got a few minutes, and Spencer answered the signal, we'll talk some Gophers basketball, Big Ten basketball, and maybe a little green and gold. Bottom of the hour, 3:30, 4 o'clock, top four at 4. And then pretty much it's, hey, call if you'd like. We'd love to hear from you. We got to fill the final hour somehow. Love to have you. Also, next segment, I will catch up on our streaming suggestions for the holiday week. I'll be home alone again, family heading out with grandma. I'll be taking care of the dog, looking for streaming suggestions. Got a bunch to go through. Keep those flying in if you like. If you have something you think we all should watch, booth at KFAN.com or tweet me at TC Head Cheese, whatever is easier. All right, here's how I see things unfolding in the NFL. I know you're all dying to know. Let's start with the AFC. Kansas City plays Oakland on Sunday. They will beat Oakland, wrap up the number one seed. However, let me just throw in, are we talking Monday Night Football, Ryan, on top four, or can I jump on that right quick?
You can go ahead and jump on it.
Because really, who cares,
yeah,
right?
It's not much of a game.
It's not, but it is the last game ever played in Oakland. And I like Oakland tonight. Now, I know that if they lose their final two games, they're wrapped up the number two seed, and there might be some motivation in that for John Gruden, but he can't drop farther than fourth, I don't think, and he can't get one, so I don't think it's a big deal. I think they want to send those fans out with a win, and Denver is just imploding and probably going to change coaches, so I actually think Oakland's going to win tonight, but they will be no match for the Chiefs, obviously, on Sunday. Chiefs are the one seed. New England wins, they stay the two seed. Houston needs to beat Jacksonville at home to keep the three seed. I think they'll do that, bouncing back from a really tough loss at Philadelphia. They fought hard against the Eagles. I know Viking fans were desperately cheering on the Houston Texans, and Nick Foles led that final field goal to give the Eagles the win and a chance to stay alive for that last wild card berth. Houston will likely keep the three seed. It's interesting, though, if they fall to Jacksonville, they'll drop to the sixth seed, and the winner of the Tennessee Indy game will get the three seed. So lots for Houston to play for. I think they'll take care of Jacksonville easily. Then you've got Baltimore, which with a win over Cleveland, interestingly enough, at home, will win the AFC North and keep the Steelers home for the playoffs. And you know what? You can feel bad for Pittsburgh. A couple calls went against them last night for sure, but you don't go to Oakland and lose. You don't go to Denver and lose this season against those teams. Otherwise, you're playing with fire, and they now are, and I think they will be on the outside looking in. But Cleveland's no joke. I mean, they're going to go into Baltimore, and the Ravens are the team now. Everybody's look out for Baltimore. They went into L.A. They might be that team with the running game, and Lamar Jackson's a wild card and a great defense. Don't sleep on Cleveland. I mean, Baker Mayfield is having some fun, and I would not be completely stunned if Cleveland goes into Baltimore. They're riding high. Everyone's telling them how great they are. Baltimore, not that long ago, was, I think, 4-5, and they've really put it together. I think Baltimore will win, but I'll bet Cleveland gives them a good fight for 60 minutes. You agree?
I would absolutely agree. I love the things Baker's been able to do for them, and I think everything's kind of taken off of them once they got rid of Hugh Jackson. It's no secret that a pretty big success spike happened in Cleveland as soon as he was out the door. But I think if the Browns can get that done, that would be sweet. And even if they don't, I think you got to really like the future for Cleveland Browns football with what seems like a franchise quarterback. I don't think they've ever had one in those in that area. So good for Baker. Good for Cleveland.
But now is Greg Williams the coach? Has he done enough, Mr. Bountygate? Is he going to actually keep that job with that? Was it Freddie Kitchens, the offensive coordinator? Suddenly they can't. Not only are they winning every game, I mean, they've lost a couple, but they're in every game they play.
Exactly.
So if you're a Browns fan, do you want Greg Williams as your coach?
It's hard to argue with it. If you're a Browns fan, you got to love the things that he's been able to do since Hugh Jackson left. But as a Vikings fan, you hate that guy.
No doubt.
Yeah, every time you hear the Greg Williams name, you just cringe because you remember back to the 2009 game.
Right. He also said he's turned down like a dozen jobs.
Yeah, we're happy for him.
I'm sure you have.
Yeah.
I think Baltimore will escape, and I really use that word for a reason. I think they'll escape against Cleveland and reach the number four seed in the AFC. The Chargers are locked in at 5, and that will set up an interesting rematch with the Ravens. Then you've got the sixth seed to be determined Sunday night, assuming Houston wins to lock in 3. Indy and Tennessee go at it, win and in, just what NBC wants. And they've got that every few years it comes down to this, winner in, loser out. The Titans are a hard team to figure. They've got a really nice running back. Mariota has not been able to stay healthy, couldn't finish the game Saturday night. They played on November 18th, and Indy beat them 38-10. This just, I've got some belief in what Indy's doing. They were 1-5, and the way they've turned things around, I think they're going to go down to Tennessee and take care of the Titans. Everyone's talking about how great the Titans are. The last four games they've won, they've beaten the quarterbacks thusly. Josh McCown, Cody Kessler, Eli without OBJ, and Josh Johnson. Now they get Andrew Luck. That's, you know, in the thoroughbred race industry, it's called stepping up in class. What Indy's defense has been able to do, I think, has been remarkable. They're not great, but they were just awful last year. And I just think what Indy has done is not going to end this week. They're going to reach the postseason. I've got Indy going into Nashville and taking down the Titans to claim the sixth seed. So now I've got my six AFC teams. That means wild card weekend. Indy goes to Houston. Another divisional battle. We'll see a couple of those, I think. Indy handled Houston the last time. It's tough to bet against Deshaun Watson at home. J.J. Watt, Jadeveon Clowney. I've got Indy upset in Houston in the wild card weekend. I've got some belief in Andrew Luck and that Colts team. So I'm going to pick Indy to take down Houston. Then you get Baltimore, L.A. They just played. And we know Baltimore went into L.A. and beat the Chargers. Now the Chargers have to go to Baltimore in January in a big spot. They were my preseason Super Bowl team, the Chargers. And I'd love to just hang with them, you know, just belief. But I've seen the story too many times. And it wasn't Philip Rivers' fault that Antonio Gates fumbled when they had a chance to win that game. But I think I saw the stat since LaDainian Tomlinson left, Rivers is like 71-71.
Really?
And I'd love to see them win. I'd love to see the Chargers get to the Super Bowl. But do you believe that the L.A. Chargers are going to go into Baltimore on a January night and take down that defense?
It's tough. I mean, like you said, they always kind of get to the one-inch line and then fumble or something like that in these big games, and especially in the playoffs. But the way Phillip Rivers has played this year, I don't know if I'm ready to rule him out in any game. And I feel like the AFC is a little bit more wide open than it is in years past. I think the Chiefs and obviously the Patriots are right there too. But the Chiefs' defense can't, you know, stop anybody right now. The Patriots, I think, are a little bit more mortal than they have been in years past. So, and with the way Phillip Rivers is playing, like basically an MVP season for all I'm concerned with, I can't rule him out. So I don't know. I'm not ready to write off the Chargers, that's for sure.
No, I get it, and I'd like to not write him off, but I don't think it's a great matchup for them. I think Baltimore will have lots of confidence, and I think they will beat the Chargers and move on. So if that happens, then you would have the Colts at the Chiefs and the Ravens at the Patriots. I think Baltimore goes into New England and knocks off Tom Terrific. I think it's one and done for the Patriots.
Wow.
Now, I don't think anybody's like looking at the Patriots right now saying they're just where they want to be. They lucked into the two seed because Houston lost. They, despite the recent losses, they're going to have a bye as long as they take care of business this weekend. That's home against the Jets, I believe, right?
Yes.
So New England will be home, but I do not trust New England. I look at Brady threw for 126 yards. He's got a left knee issue that no one's talking about. I think it ends. And I know it's foolish to pick against New England at home in the playoffs. That doesn't happen. I think Baltimore's defense happens. I've got Baltimore upsetting the Patriots in, what do we call that weekend? Divisional round weekend?
The divisional round. That's exactly right.
So Baltimore moves on. Indy at Kansas City, you know, the only kind of team that's going to give the Chiefs trouble, I think, is a quarterback that can match Mahomes. That Chiefs secondary, you know, Eric Berry's back, but their cornerbacks are a mess. You know what? Andrew Luck's not even in the playoffs right now. I've got him in the AFC Championship game. Until Andy Reid does something in a playoff game for Kansas City, I refuse to believe in them. I like them. I love Mahomes. I've got Indy beating the Chiefs, and it's a Baltimore-Indy. Think about that. The team that left Indy in the dead of night to become the Baltimore Ravens now faces the old team in the AFC Championship game, Baltimore-Indy. And that's, I'm probably the only person outside of those two cities that is going with that right now, but I'm putting the Ravens in the Super Bowl. I'm putting John Harbaugh, who was going to be fired a month ago, he is going to reach Atlanta and represent the AFC with Lamar Jackson in his unconventional offense and the option, and Jackson impressed me. I'm not, forget the running. He made some great throws in that game.
He's got a laser arm on.
He's special. I really like that kid.
For sure.
So I got Baltimore in the Super Bowl. So now we'll zip through the NFC. I don't want to make this a two-segment bit.
All right, that's fine. We could do that.
All right, NFC. We'll start with this weekend. Vikes are beating the Bears. Vikes will take down the Bears. A much more motivated team at home is going to take care of business. And the Bears can start looking at the scoreboard. And as the Rams are laying the heat on San Francisco, although that Niner team has no quit in them, and that might be tougher than some might think, I'm picking the Vikes, regardless of how motivated the Bears are, to reach the postseason and have a rematch with the Bears the following week at Soldier Field. So New Orleans is the one seed. The Rams will beat San Francisco to stay two. Chicago is the three. Dallas is already the four. Seattle's the five. And all you have to figure out is it Minnesota or Philly? It's the Vikes. The Vikes will go to Chicago wild card weekend. I'll show you my pad. I crossed it off. I actually picked the Vikes first.
Oh, okay.
Because that's the kind of team that'll give the Bears trouble, right?
I think so, too.
You know, Bears are going to hold stuff back this weekend, and they'll show the Vikes stuff they haven't seen. Nagy's an offensive genius, blah, blah, blah. Trubisky still has never played in a game like this. And against this defense, on a cold day, it's not going to go easy for Trubisky. Unfortunately for your favorite team, Kirk Cousins has never played in a game like this either. And if it's primetime, forget about it. If it's cold and windy, I just ultimately am going to have to pick the Bears. But I don't think it's easy. I think it's a late win. I think it's a close game. I'm picking the Bears begrudgingly because I hate the Bears.
I appreciate that.
I have no hate for the purple. I have disdain for a lot of purple fans that I hear from a lot.
Sure.
But I have nothing against the purple. So I'm picking the Bears begrudgingly to move on a wild card weekend. Seattle-Dallas is a rematch. The Seahawks already beat them in Dallas once. I don't think they beat them again. I'm going to pick Dallas to, and it's ugly. I don't believe really in either team, but I'm going to pick Dallas to get past Seattle. So then Dallas would go to New Orleans. The Bears would go to the Rams. I'm taking the home teams. I'm taking New Orleans and L.A. Bears have not proven anything on the road. They barely beat average teams. L.A.'s not a great home field advantage, and they're banged up and looking nothing like what they looked like a month ago. But I think they'll take care of the Bears in a big spot at home. Saints, Rams, 1-2. As unshocky as I was in the AFC, I'm going shock in the NFC. Nobody beats the Saints at home. Saints, Ravens. That's my Super Bowl right now. And you know, I'm not a Sean Payton guy. I love him to not win anything else. He's so smug. People call me the Sultan of Smug. Sorry. Sean Payton is a Sultan of Smug, but I do love Drew Brees. And I think it would be great for him to get a second ring. And they have not been great of late. Not that impressive. They were frankly fortunate to win last night. The Panther win was kind of ugly. But they will win at home. No one's going to beat them. And then I think they'll take care of the Ravens in the Super Bowl. So I've got Saints over Ravens.
That's a hot take. I mean, the Saints, I don't think anyone's going out on a limb on that one. But the Ravens, man, I like that take. Cause
they may not even make the playoffs.
Well, that's the thing. Because that's the gamble that you just took, Davey. But I think you're right. I mean, if they get in, they've got the perfect type of team to make one of those long runs from one of those teams that you don't ever expect to see going that far. But well, with Lamar Jackson, he's really good right now.
He is really fun to watch and just kind of figuring out what he's doing. And that team is no one wants to play Baltimore right now. Although Cleveland doesn't care. And so they might just wreck everything I've just talked about, because if Cleveland goes into Baltimore and upsets the Ravens, I will not be shocked at all. I mean, I'll be surprised, but I won't be shocked because in Baker, I trust. 3:15, we'll come back, open segment, have a chat, time for a call or two if you care to. We'll catch up on some of the Netflix, Hulu, Amazon recommendations I've been getting. And bottom of the hour, Spencer Tollickson to talk some Gophers and Big Ten basketball. Sinekin and Donaldson in for Bump and Guard. Back with more right after these.
You're listening to The Fan.
Yo.
You better watch out. You better not cry. You better not pout. I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming to town. He's making a list.
Back with you at 3:21 on a Christmas Eve afternoon. That's not Johnny Mathis, is it?
It is the Carpenters.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Going old school.
Yes, sir.
Dave Sinekin, Ryan Donaldson, in for the boys this afternoon. We are live and local till 5 o'clock today. And we wish you all a Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays. And my guess is many of you are scrambling right now for the perfect gift. I've got an idea I'm going to throw out there that my family's been enjoying of late. It's a online game that you play on your TV called Jackbox. Have you heard about it?
I think I have. Explain it, and then might ring a bell, because I think I may have played this with my brother and sister over Thanksgiving.
Okay, yeah, we did too. My brother was playing it in Milwaukee, and that's the first time I saw it. And so you download the game. It's $25, and there's five or six games within the package, and they've got like six or seven packages, all kinds of games, but each one's $25. So once you download it, you connect it to your TV via Apple TV or an HDMI cord or whatever, and you play on your phones. So your family members, your friends play on your phones. You get a little four-digit code, and there are a number of fun games that are interactive games, like who's the faker among the five people playing, or there's questions like one person has to guess how many people prefer Coke over Pepsi. And let's say he says 64%. Everybody else has to vote higher or lower. So it's a point game. And it's really fun, and it's clever the way they do it, and it's just a fun family or group of friends. Some of it's a little NFSW, so if your kids are... So my youngsters are 13, and they've had a lot of fun using words and things that normally would not get the okay. So you can get a little blue, but you don't have to. But they do kind of open the door for it. But it's a great stocking stuffer for the family. And we've been playing it a bunch. Sometimes you get to a point where you see the same question. That's a bit disappointing. I'd like to see them add content. But I'd recommend it wholeheartedly. The laughter that has ensued in our family playing Jackbox has been really fun. So I'm going to throw that out there as a... And that's one that you don't have to go to the mall and stand in line to pick it up. It's you just go to, I think it's, well, it's jackbox.com is the website. And then when you do it on your phone, you dial up Jackbox TV. We'll be playing it tonight. That's it's on the docket. We played it last night. That's why I dipped in and out of the Wolves game. We had to get through the Jackbox. All right, here are some streaming recommendations that have come in at the Bradshaw and Brian inbox and at my Twitter handle, TC Head Cheese. Appreciate everybody. There's a serious action sci-fi bent among our listeners because that's been a lot of what we're getting. Let's see. Keith is recommending Wrecking Crew, which is about musicians who recorded studio albums during the heyday of the rock era. That sounds really cool. I like documentary-type movies about music. Wrecking Crew, he didn't say if it's Netflix or Amazon or what, but Wrecking Crew on the music industry. David recommends The Kominsky Method, which I've never heard of, starring Michael Douglas and Alan Arkin. I'm a big Alan Arkin guy. Going back to The In-Laws. You ever see The In-Laws?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, my God. You have to go watch
What era is that?
Late 70s.
Okay.
This would be Peter Falk, remember, from Columbo?
Sure.
Peter Falk and Alan Arkin are, their kids are getting married, so they meet, and it's the wedding weekend, and Peter Falk is like a spy, and he looks like he's a normal guy. Alan Arkin's a nervous dentist. And the hijinks, it's one of my favorite comedies of all time.
Okay, I'll check it out.
A much younger Alan Arkin starring in The In-Laws. That was a Sinekin family favorite back in the late 70s and 80s. But thanks, David, for The Kominsky Method. I will check that out. Joshua suggests Dark Matter on Netflix, where corporations control the universe and a group of ex-cons are trying to stop them. That sounds intriguing. I'll at least check out the trailer on that one. Josh is suggesting Archer on Hulu. I'm a big Archer guy.
Yeah, I've Archer's hilarious.
Most seasons. I feel like the last couple of years they've kind of gone off the rails a little bit, but the first 5-6 seasons, I love Archer. That's a great one. Another one I've seen from Jason, a show on BBC America called Killing Eve, which I did see. Did you see that one, Ryan?
I did.
Yeah, that was great.
That was really, really, really well done.
And I'm excited to watch season two. That's Sandra Oh, who is tracking a serial killer, this woman, who is a Russian woman, who is just as evil as it gets.
That actress is unbelievable.
She is
spectacular. She's diabolical.
She is. I mean, I think the opening scene in the whole show, she walks by a kid and like spills her cereal right into her lap. I mean, that's the kind of person she is.
That's cold-hearted.
Very cold-hearted. BBC America, Killing Eve, definitely recommend that one. That was a terrific show. I think I had one more. Hold on. Time out. I hate when I get off the page. Why am I changing the page? Dark by Tony, a supernatural thriller. That's like, it's in German, but it's dubbed?
Yes, it is. And that was like my one thing going into it. I'm thinking I'm not going to like this because it's going to look like an old kung fu movie where the lips don't match.
Right.
But the voice acting and the lips actually match up very, very well. And the voice acting is good enough where you can almost ignore it. It doesn't bother you once, you kind of get used to it throughout the series. I highly recommend Dark. A really, really good show. Thought-provoking. I think it's, like you said, a German show, and it is on Netflix. I went through that one pretty quickly.
Excellent. So we'll put that one down. I'm currently halfway through Homecoming, the Julia Roberts series on Amazon, where she is in this kind of sketchy, a government agency that helps soldiers in the, getting used to things once they've left the service. But weird things are going on, and it's very conspiratorial. It jumps back in time. It's really cool, very well acted, and Julia Roberts is great in it. I think 5 out of 10 I've watched. That's on my docket for when the family heads south a little bit later in the week. I'll finish that up. But from what I've seen through 5 episodes, Homecoming's been really kind of weird, dark, and you just don't know what exactly is going on, but it's not good. So thank you for those recommendations. Keep them coming. We got another hour and a half to go. One final guest to get to. He's coming up next. Spencer Tollickson, kind enough to join us to chat Big Ten basketball, Gophers basketball, a teeny bit of green and gold. And then coming up at 4 o'clock will be our top 4 at 4. open phone lines in our final hour. Sinekin and Donaldson right back with you on The Fan.
You're listening to The Fan.
Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Let your heart be light. From now on, our troubles will be out of sight.
Mm-hmm. All right, this is lovely music and all. Can we pick it up a little bit? Find some little faster paced Christmas
anything
music.
You, Davey. Sure.
Yeah, something a little. Get my toast tapping a little bit.
All right, I can do that.
Back with you at 3:35. Sinekin in for Barrero. Ryan Donaldson by my side. Spencer Tollickson joins in just a second. First, a little bit of NFL breaking news. On the heels of last night's impressive Seahawks victory at home, Sunday Night Football against Pat Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs, Pete Carroll has inked a contract extension through the 2021 season. I think that adds 2 years to his deal. The NFL's oldest coach, you'd never know it. The guy, I mean, just looks like perpetually 60.
He's the
he?
Oldest coach in the league?
And he has been. He's like...
Wow.
Well, look it up. I think he's...
I could believe it,
well,
I guess.
He's definitely closer to 70 than 60.
Wow.
But he's older than you think he would be.
He looks great for his age.
He does.
67 years old.
Yeah, he's 67 years of age, and he has done a remarkable job for a Seahawks team that started 0-2 and really... looked like they were going nowhere early in the season. It's weird because Russell Wilson, for three quarters, just doesn't look anything like Russell Wilson. He doesn't run very much, just doesn't make big plays. They rely on the running game, and then boom, the fourth quarter happens, and he's dropping in. I mean, Collinsworth couldn't get over that one throw last night. That he threw it all. It would have hit the top of the roof.
Oh, yeah.
And dropped it right into Tyler Lockett's hands. So he will be a Seahawk head man, head coach for at least the next 3 seasons. That news just breaking. All right, very happy to have a guest here at 3:37 on a Christmas Eve afternoon. Spencer Tollickson, Gopher analyst, who will be on the call Friday night when the Gophers take on Mount St. Mary's. I know you're in the car. It's Christmas Eve. I can't believe you're willing to give me 10 minutes, but I really appreciate it, Spencer. Thank you. How are you?
No problem, Dave. We'll help you kill a segment. I'm well. We just got to my mom's house. Special shout out to Patty Tollickson for hosting this year.
Lovely.
She does every year. Way too much food, way too much Christmas cookies will be consumed, but hey, it's the holidays. That's what it's for.
Is there a traditional Christmas Eve meal that Mom Tollickson prepares every year and has since you were a kid?
So the main course itself, no. It tends to change. However, she's notorious for her bacon-wrapped water chestnuts.
Yum.
Which are... absolutely killer. I'm actually a huge fan of her homemade cheese ball, which is
how could you
legit,
not be? Yeah, how could
right?
you not be?
And then she makes a Christmas cookie, Davey, that it'll knock your socks off. She calls it a bird's nest. I was describing it so eloquently the other night when Mike Grimm asked me in our three topics in 3 minutes before in the pregame, mm-hmm. my favorite Christmas cookie, and it's never changed, it never will change. Patty Tollickson's bird's nest. Christmas cookie by far.
Well, can you quickly describe what we're talking about? Because it sounds like, you know, a nest sounds kind of stringy and little thin things. Tell me exactly what we're talking about.
It's quite the contrary. So you got to be a nut person. And I'm not a huge nut guy. However, this is a Christmas cookie that has some sort of walnut type crunch to it. And then basically, I think it's just a thumbprint with a big old gob of frosting right in the middle of it with green food coloring a la bird's nest, so it looks green. My sister and I fight over them, although her Christmas cookie etiquette is not quite where it needs to be.
Really?
She actually breaks off all the parts of the cookie that don't contain any frosting and then just eats the parts that do contain the frosting.
Well, that should be illegal. That you can't. Come on.
I agree. It goes against the cookie etiquette in as far as I'm concerned. So I think I'm going to be on the side this year when it comes to Patty's Christmas cookie giveaway where I receive more bird's nests. The problem is, it's my sister's favorite cookie as well, so we fight over them.
Yeah, but she doesn't eat it right. I mean, that's a slap in Patty's face right there. I mean, come on. That's
right,
just...
Right, you might as well just be eating the frosting, right?
No question. Right. I'm very glad you're giving us a few minutes before Patty's warm Christmas hospitality. We mentioned one more tune-up. It's hard to believe that, what is it, a week from tomorrow the Gophers are in Madison, or is it a week from Wednesday?
They play Thursday.
Oh, Thursday the 3rd, right?
They play Thursday the 3rd. And, you know, I know we've already had the Big Ten opener, and, you know, I just can't help but say the Big Ten opener, right? You know, we've played the two pre-Big Ten games, but they will essentially reopen the Big Ten season at Madison, who's ranked like 12th, 13th, 14th, something like that in the country. Boy, a tough test to open up on the road in the Big Ten. I guess, again, Ohio State was the first one, but certainly doesn't get any easier as they go on the road at Wisconsin.
Are you at all concerned that the Gophers might be in for a rude awakening at the Kohl Center? And I know they've been to Columbus and they've played a couple of road tests, but now, they're coming off of hyphens and directional schools, and they haven't really, you know, played a lot of high level competition. I don't happen to think Wisconsin will be the 12th or 14th ranked team as we go through the season. They're a nice team, but I think they have some limitations. But as you say, you know, there is not going to be an easy test no matter where you go in the Big Ten. But I'm not sure the Gophers are ready for what Madison and the Badgers might hit them with next week.
Yeah, I think Minnesota, you talk about road games, and road wins are going to be at a minimum this year. I don't care who you are in the Big Ten. You better win your home games. Let's just say that.
Yeah, for sure.
Road games are going to be very difficult. I don't think Minnesota's going to be shocked or surprised of what they'll get at Wisconsin. They'll know going into that game that that's an extremely difficult place to play. They're not going to get any calls or any whistles. Wisconsin owns the officials in that building. It started with the Bo Ryan era and Greg Gard, and they get every call. So they'll know that and expect that coming into it. You know, Minnesota's schedule in terms of the non-conference was front-loaded. They played some very difficult teams and won some very good games in the non-conference. It's just been this little lull of the last, I think they'll play three games in the last 19 days prior to that Wisconsin game against, it's probably their three easiest games of the season. I think they'll be ready for the Wisconsin game. When playing the Badgers this year, they have other pieces that contribute, but you got to be able to slow down Ethan Happ. He's one of those guys where if you let him get going and if you don't double him and if you don't make it easy or hard on him, he'll put up 35 on you just like that. He's a horrible free throw shooter. So it'll be interesting to see what defensive game plans and schematically Pitino and the coaching staff come up with if they elect to stop Happ. Or if they say, hey, he's going to get his, just don't let anybody else beat you. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, for sure. I want to go back to the officiating for a second because, as you, I think, no, I'm not a Badger fan at all. I went to Indiana. I don't root for the Badgers in any way, shape, or form, despite our shared green and gold love. But I've been to the Kohl Center the last two or three years. I have a client in Madison. We always work it out where when Indiana's there, I go to the game. Now, IU doesn't play there this year, so we're still working out which game I'm going to go to, but I have never in my life experienced not only officiating that always helps the home team, but the fans are beyond obnoxious. Every single whistle, if it doesn't go their way, they are screaming.
Right.
I mean, it almost has to intimidate the officials. I've gone to a million games in Bloomington. I've never experienced that in Bloomington. I don't know what it is about the Badger fans, but they come in there ready to put the fear of God into the officials if they don't make the calls the Badgers' way. It drives me crazy. So I know what you're talking about there.
Yeah, you're spot on, Dave. And the fan mentality, it was all stemmed by the way Bo Ryan would constantly, for 40 minutes, work those officials in that arena. And the fan base has adapted, if you will, to that mentality of, you said it, if it's a blatant charge call, well, they're going to say it's a flop call because that's just what they're conditioned to do. You know, if it's traveling or whatever it may be, they are always going to go with their home squad and what would benefit their team. You bring up another interesting point when you talk about Indiana Hoosiers and Assembly Hall. Probably the most, I would say the most educated fans, just in regards to how they react or don't react to the way the game is being officiated. Really, really smart fan base, but also knowing when to get involved in the game and try to give their team a lift. That's one thing that I appreciate, along with others as well, appreciate and enjoy about going to Assembly Hall is the way that those fans engage in the game. It's a really special place, obviously, as you attended school there and have been there. I think you said you go there once a year. Really cool arena.
Yeah, it is. I'm heading down in February for the Ohio State game with my son Jackson, who at this moment would love to go there, but going to have to get those grades at Minnetonka High School up a little bit if he wants to qualify sure. to head down there. All right, tell me where we are with Eric Curry. I know he's been practicing. He's got a heavy brace. Do we expect that we'll see him Friday night against Mount St. Mary's to knock the rust off, or from your information, is he still a couple of days away?
First of all, I don't know. I have no idea. I would think that if he's ready to go, and this isn't going out on a limb, if he's 100%, yeah, he'll go. If he's in a position where he's not 100% and he's not as far along as they wished or hoped that he would be at this point, I think they're going to continue to hold him out. My gut would say that it's probably the latter. I would think that, you know, what has it been now? I mean, it's been before the season, so it's been a month and a half, maybe closer to two. I would say that 2 months ago, Patino probably, if you would have said, will you have Eric Curry back by the Mount St. Mary's game, I think he would have probably said yes. With that mentality and that mindset, if I were a betting man, I don't think we would see him. Now, that being said, they had, 10 days between the last game and the previous one, and now they're going to have, I think it's 9 days to the Mount St. Mary's game. So maybe he turns a corner and he's ready to go. I'm not sure, but I would say even if there's an inkling that he's not 100%, just hold him out. It's going to be a rugged Big Ten season. You know that. I know that. I think the last thing I saw was some projection had 10 teams in from the Big Ten this year into the tournament. So it's going to be a rugged, tough Big Ten season. Let's make sure he's 100% before we put him out there.
Talking with Gopher radio analyst Spencer Tallickson as we get set for the Big Ten season to officially resume. Two games on the books, 18 left to go. I love the 20-game Big Ten season. As you just said, Joseph Lenardi or whatever his name is, Mr. Bracketology, has sort of gone between 9 and 10 teams potentially reaching the big dance. How much pressure do you think there is on Patino and his staff to make that tournament? And if 9 teams get in and they're number 10, what does that do for the future of this program? What kind of pressure do you think he's feeling as he just notched win number 100 with the program?
Yeah, I think there's some pressure to make the tournament this year, and rightfully so. And I think Patino understands that and knows that and would embrace that. Look, this is his 6th year. They've made one NCAA tournament in the previous 5 years. You know, last year, clearly, if they stay healthy and the off-the-court issues don't happen, we could talk about that with Joe Blue in the face, but, you know, that's a tournament team. That's probably a team that would contend in the NCAA tournament to get out of the first weekend. I think in Patino's defense, I would just like, just for one season, for this guy to have full strength from an injury perspective as well as, you know, an issue or off the court issues or whatever however you want to word it perspective. Feels like every year he's been here when he's poised to get something going, like this year, I mean, Eric Curry is going to make a huge difference if and when he gets back healthy to 100%. I just like to see this guy get his full squad at 100% for a full season and see what he can do. To go back to your question, Dave, I think there's a bit of pressure for Patino to make the tournament this year. Yeah, I think this team is certainly capable and talented enough to make the tournament. But in the Big Ten, I mean, out of the 20 games, there's legitimately going to be 12 to 14 games that come down to a possession or two at the end of the game. And if you go 10-2 in those 12, you're the peacock. If you go 2-10, you're the feather duster. Like, it just comes down to that. I think this team is a tournament team. Let's hopefully they get there in Selection Sunday.
We know what we have in Murphy and Coffey, and you hope you know what you have in Curry. And I know Coffey is taking over some of the point guard duties for this team. But I just feel like if they are going to get to where they are going to go, the point guard play has to get better. And you need to see the consistency from Isaiah Washington that, you know, you see it one game and then you just don't see it the next. I know that's maddening for fans of the maroon and gold, but don't you feel like if they can get solid play night in, night out from Isaiah Washington, this team might have a higher ceiling than many people believe?
Potentially. I don't know if Washington's the guy. I would say point guard play in general is going to become paramount in the Big Ten.
Mm-hmm.
Whether that's Amir Coffey, whether it's Washington, you know, you can mix in McBrayer there. He hasn't put Kelcher there at all, but maybe you try him out. Kelcher's really been extremely impressive for me this year in all aspects of the game. I think as the season has gone on, you know, we saw Amir play a bulk of the minutes starting at the point guard, and I think he'll continue to start at the one. However, we've seen Washington the last couple of games really kind of be the true point guard. It's going to be paramount as the Big Ten rolls through. I mean, you look at these opposing backcourts in the Big Ten, you got to be able to be on par if you're going to contend to win games. Washington seems to be trending in the right direction. Two games ago, 13 assists, zero turnovers. I think last game he had 10 or 11 assists. Definitely had more than 10 assists and a couple of turnovers. So if he can continue that mentality, like with Washington, it's all about his mentality. You know, it shifts from game to game, and that's where you're spot on when it comes to can he be consistent. But if he would just embrace that role of distributor first, scoring second, I think he could be the point guard that Minnesota needs throughout the rest of the season.
Last one for Spencer, because, I mean, after all, the bird nest cookies are waiting.
They're waiting.
I don't want the sister to just destroy all of them before you even get in the house.
Right.
Most of bumper-to-bumper listeners realize you're a Packer fan like me. Curious, in the final minute or two, we've had a few weeks to digest the coaching change.
Yep.
Have you settled on either a name or the kind of coach you'd like to see the Packers bring in to guide Rodgers for his golden years?
You know, it's interesting. I've heard all the opinions of they got to go defensive because Rodgers can handle the offense. They got to go offensive to please Rodgers. Young, old, I don't know. I don't know if – I think they need that young, innovator, offensive type of coach. That's what would move the needle for me. However, I understand that they probably will go defensive because that defense, since they won the Super Bowl, they've had a bottom third defense in the NFL since they won the Super Bowl, which is really quite frustrating and disappointing considering they had the best quarterback in the league since that point in time. And they really don't have anything to show for it. I think more than anything, if it's defensive or offensive, could really care less. They need to hire a coach with the right mindset and mentality of, let's play to win. Let's play not to lose. We saw too many games where the Packers lost with that sort of mindset and that mentality. You know, I could name them off and count them for you.
Please don't.
My brother-in-law here at Christmas is a Packer fan as well, so I'm not going to take the credit for this take, but he's thinking Vic Fangio, the defensive coordinator with the Bears.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
what do you think?
I've heard it. I know they were interested last year as the defensive coordinator. Yeah, I mean, I'd be okay with that. I'm actually kind of a Pettin Bobo, and the fact that he had that defense ranked 15th in the league and 7th in sacks despite losing so many players. I mean, to me, the ideal scenario is to find some young, innovative coach, whether it's Zach Taylor with the Rams or even Matt LaFleur with the Titans, that just wows everybody, wows Rodgers, wows Gutekunst and Murphy, and he keeps Pettin in-house to build the defense. I kind of want to see what Pettin can do. But if Fangio gets the deal and we steal him from the Bears and he builds a defense in Green Bay, I could definitely listen to that. That would be interesting to me.
Yeah, I'll take it. Definitely take it.
Enjoy your Christmas. Thank you so much for spending some time, Spencer, answering the bat signal. And we'll be tuned in Friday night for Gophers Mount St. Mary's.
Merry Christmas, guys.
All right, take it easy. Spencer Tollickson about to enjoy Mom Patty's bird nest cookies. You're not going to believe this, and this might change the way a lot of people think about me or think they know me. I don't bake at all. I love to cook. I'm the primary cook in my house. I bake once a year, and it's right now. My grandma, for those that remember Packer Preview back in the mid-90s, Grandma Dorothy came on the show every Sunday morning. Well, Grandma had her legendary sweet rolls, and I make those once a year. I made the dough yesterday. I'm going to call my wife when I get on the break to remind her to take it out of the fridge so it kind of gets up to room temperature, and I'll be rolling out about 60 of these bad boys. They're kind of crescent-shaped, full of cinnamon sugar.
Yes.
Got some golden raisins. I like nuts, though the kids refuse to let me put them in. But there's like a pound, I'm not exaggerating, there's like a pound of butter in these things. And they are, and then little frosting, little vanilla frosting on top.
Oh, the best, yeah.
They're spectacular, and we'll have them for Christmas morning, which we always celebrate at the mother-in-law's tomorrow morning. And so I'll be going home and baking myself tonight, believe it or not.
That's fantastic.
Does that just wreck how anybody perceives me?
No, I don't think so.
I don't wear an apron, you know, I promise you that. But I think son Dylan will be helping me. That's coming up at about 5:30. All right, we'll pause. We'll come back. Again, Spencer, Johnny Athletic, Christmas Eve afternoon. Thank you guys so much for giving us a segment today. Really appreciate that. We have an hour to go before we are done. We'll come back with top four at four. And following that, free to take your calls. We'll talk some more NFL, because why wouldn't we, with 1 week to go and the Vikes poised to return to the postseason. But when we come back, top four at four on The Fan.
You're listening to The Fan. Fan, just in case you missed it, it's the top five sports talkers of the day. Now, it's time for Dan Barrero's top five at five, driven by Borton Volvo.
Relax, it's not five. Many of you are conditioned that you hear the music, it's like 5 to 5, 5 o'clock. Well, just going to let you know, it's 4. We're off the air at 5 today. We figured we'd get it in. It kills a segment. Catch up on the day's sports news. Dave Sinekin in for Barrero. Ryan Donaldson in for Garzy on this Christmas Eve afternoon. And I'll let Ryan take it from here.
We might as well start with your Minnesota Vikings. Well, not your Minnesota Vikings,
no,
Davey.
They're not mine.
They're not your Minnesota Vikings. They're my Minnesota Vikings. They're a lot of our listeners' Minnesota Vikings, and they scored 27 unanswered points yesterday at Ford Field, where the Gophers will be playing a ball game shortly, which we'll get to later in the top five as well. But they were at Ford Field yesterday. Obviously, everybody saw the Kyle Rudolph out jumping the entire Lions defense to end the first half on a Hail Rudy for a touchdown as time expired at the first half. Kirk Cousins, at one point in the second quarter, with just a few minutes left in the first half, was 1 for 3 for 2 yards. He finished the ball game 21 of 28 for 253 yards and 3 touchdowns. They had a pretty successful day on the ground as well. Team ran 28 times for 100 yards. As I said, passed the ball 253 yards. So the Vikings offense, despite the slow start, still puts up 353 yards of offense and 27 points.
The slow start's got to be a concern, because you do that in a playoff situation and your season will end. Look, they've beaten the Dolphins and Lions. Terrible teams, terrible cities, terrible stadiums, the whole common bit. I'm going to do nothing to take away, though, from the fact that we know this team's talented. You know, they were a Final Four team a year ago. It's all about Kirk Cousins now, and it starts on Sunday. And I think what happened in the second half certainly will help keep the confidence going, because that had to be nervous time, that whole first half, watching that offense just three downs punt, 4 times against the Lions defense that's about as toothless. They've got Darius Slay. And other than that, I don't think I can name a guy. Ziggy Ansah's out. I can't name a Lion defender. I'm not proud of that, but it just tells you that that's a team, when you go into their house, the team that you sacked 10 times a month ago, it's a division game, I get that, and they have pride, but Stafford was limited all week. He isn't 100%. He doesn't have Marvin Jones or Golden Tate or Kerryon Johnson to hand the ball to. He's got LeGarrette Blount. Do they have to wheel out to play? I expect the defense to handle Detroit, and I do think they're going to do a good job against Chicago on Sunday. But I said it earlier, not a surprise, PA referred to his Viking as surging. I'm not there. I have not seen enough, and I didn't see the game yesterday. But from what everything that's been described, competition hasn't been good enough to call yourself surging. Again, you take care of business against Chicago. Their motivation's totally in flux. I believe they're going to try to win the game and know that they'll keep some tricks in their back pocket because they know likely they'll face the Vikes a week later or 6 days later. But they'll have an eye on the scoreboard. What's cool about Week 17, did you notice this? There are 8 games that kick off at 3:25.
Yeah, I did notice that.
I love that because they don't want anybody to play before anybody else that matters. So the early games are almost all garbage, mm-hmm. including my Packers against the Lions. There are a couple games where there is some ramifications, but anything where two teams are battling, they're all playing. 8 games at 3:25, including Bears-Vikings.
That's exactly right, which came out, I guess, probably about 24 hours ago. I think just after the ball game yesterday, they announced that the Vikings-Bears was getting flexed. So if you have not heard the news yet, yes, indeed, next Sunday, right here on these very airwaves, 3:25 kickoff at U.S. Bank Stadium.
And the reason they're doing that is because the Bears play at 3:25 because they're out. The Eagles. Correct.
Eagles-Redskins.
Yes, that game is also a late start, so you want both games being played at the same time. And from the Bears' perspective, that's where I was going. The Rams play late as well, and they want the Rams to lose. And if they look up at halftime, it's 31-0 Rams, they'll shut it down at that point, right? At that point, they'll let off the gas.
Probably.
And say, all right, you know what? It's not our day.
Yeah.
Let's let the Vikes live on, and we'll meet them at Soldier Field next Saturday or Sunday.
Yeah, they don't want to show all their cards because, yeah, like you said, most likely scenarios, we're back at Soldier Field about 6 days later.
Like so. The Pack 6 years ago, right? In 2012, it was
exactly right.
Packers Week 17, and you beat them, but then you got to go play them, and then things didn't go your way.
Minnesota Timberwolves got a huge win over the Oklahoma City Thunder on the road yesterday. It's just their third road win of the year, and this one was actually against a quality opponent. The Oklahoma City Thunder are the third seed in the West right now. Their other two wins on the road this year, Minnesota Timberwolves have beaten Cleveland Cavaliers and the Brooklyn Nets, who are a combined 24-45.
Most impressive win of the year, the most unexpected win. Johnny Athletic mentioned it. OKC comes in to that game as the number one seed in the West, playing as well as anybody in the NFL with Russell Westbrook and Paul George and the big guy Adams in the middle. They were playing great basketball, and the Wolves come in without Jeff Teague, without Derrick Rose. So, I mean, just you don't expect that at all. Now, it was a second of a back-to-back for the Thunder. That helps a little bit. But it was all about Andrew Wiggins, 30 points, 6 rebounds, 5 assists. He hit the game-winning shot as Steven Adams tried to guard him. He went around him, had a nice little hoop there to give the Wolves the lead, and they get a stop at the end of the game. Big threes by Covington, by Šarić. Just, it's, again, we had an emailer said before that basketball to him is unwatchable. That game was so watchable last night to watch this team battle back on a 24-6 run to take a lead in the third quarter and shorthanded. And struggling big time on the road, clearly getting together to play top golf at OKC made the difference. Because now they like each other.
Yeah.
And they laughed at each other. I guess Josh Okogie swung and missed.
A little team bonding experience.
Yeah, and guess what? Okogie played 25 minutes last night and did the defensive things that he does. Gorgui Dieng was 5-for-6 and hit a ridiculous 3 at the end of a shot clock that he just threw up and it went in. It was just one of those nights. And a nice way to go into the Christmas holiday to get a much-needed win on the road. They've got 4 of the next 5 away from home. And you know, if they are going to, they're only 3 games out of 7th in the West. As crazy as that, they're 13th, but they're 3 games out of 7th. So you start winning some road games, maybe we'll have some meaningful basketball after the trade deadline.
We saw the Minnesota Vikings take care of business at Ford Field yesterday. We have to hope now that the Minnesota Golden Gophers can take care of business at Ford Field on Wednesday. It's the Quick Lane Bowl the day after Christmas. As I said, on Wednesday, it's a 4:15 kickoff against Georgia Tech. Your Golden Gophers, 5.5-point underdogs.
If I were in Vegas, and I, look, row the boat, Sky Uma, congratulations, PJ Fleck, on getting what appears to be a terrific recruiting class. We know there's a couple guys that may not play for the team, that hasn't been ironed out yet. But if I were in Vegas Wednesday, I would back up the Brinks truck and take Georgia Tech in this game. And no offense, I'm pulling for the Gophers. But here's what you got going against you. All right, you got a couple guys suspended. I don't know how meaningful those players are. That will be laid out. They're playing without their best player, right? We know that Blake Cashman, former Eden Prairie star, has elected to sit this one out and get ready for the NFL draft. I have absolutely no problem with a player doing that. You want to fight me on it? Call me. We'll talk about it in the next break. Now, if you're in the Final 4 of the playoff, if you're playing for Clemson and you back out, that's a little tougher. I mean, now you're letting the team down trying to win a championship, and I'll understand it, but I'll have a harder time with it. But anybody not playing in the playoff, if you want to step away and start preparing for the draft and not deal with what, you know, Jalen Smith dealt with Notre Dame when tore up his knee in a bowl game that didn't matter, and now he's finally getting back to form 2-3 years later. So you're missing your best tackler, your best defensive player. You're also without your left tackle, Donnell Green, who's also decided. I don't think his draft prospects are quite as strikingly high as Cashman's are. I think Cashman's ranked, I looked it up, Draft Tech has him as the 16th ranked inside linebacker. That means you're a mid-round pick, 4th, 5th, 6th round pick. I'm not sure what Donnell Green's draft prospects are, but they're both sitting out. Then you got to face a Georgia Tech team whose coach is retiring, Paul Johnson. It's his 9th bowl game. This is PJ's first with the Gophers. Mm-hmm. We know he obviously was in bowl games at Western Michigan. But a team that wants to send their beloved coach off. And then Georgia Tech is the best running team in football. They average 340 yards a game. I know the Gophers' defense has improved since the change of defensive coordinator, but they have not seen a team that runs the football like this all season. This smells to me like 27-13.
Oof. I hope not.
I have to say, I like to wager on games a little bit, a little betting pool with my buddies.
Yeah, why not?
And I'm usually not real strong on college football. I know the NFL eons better. I went 5-0 in bowl games last weekend.
Nice.
From like Wednesday through Saturday, whatever that last game was. I went 5-0. Got a little thing going. And Georgia Tech's one of my top picks. I just think there's too much going against the Gophers without Cashman, with the coach retiring, with that running attack. I think it's going to be a long afternoon. I hope I'm wrong, but I think it's going to be a long afternoon.
Only one way to find out that is tune into this very station at 4:15 on Wednesday.
Correct.
Full slate of NBA games tomorrow. Might not have the same tradition and lore as the NFL Thanksgiving, but NBA Christmas Day slate of games includes these: 11 a.m. Bucks Knicks. Not a great matchup, but you got the Bucks, who are a surprise team in the East.
Well, that's
and you got Giannis.
Yeah, and that's my hometown team, so I'll be interested. I can't believe they put the Knicks on. It's not like Porzingis is playing.
Yeah.
It's just an awful, awful game. It's a showcase for the Greek Freak is what it is.
For sure.
And the Bucks hammered the Celtics the other night in Boston and then followed it up losing in Miami. So they need to get back to winning. But that team is fun to watch. They're 10 or 11 deep. They have a really nice coach in Mike Budenholzer, and I'll be one of the very few in this market watching that game tomorrow morning.
Then you've got the Thunder and the Rockets in action at 2 o'clock. The Sixers and the Celtics follow that game at 4:30. Then you got LeBron and the Lakers at 7 o'clock versus Steph and the Warriors.
Yeah, that's the one.
That's the one game everybody's got circled on their calendar for sure.
Final game is Portland-Utah.
That's right.
A rematch. Utah just blew them out in Portland by 30, and now Portland gets some revenge in Utah. So that's always interesting for me when two teams play twice within 3 or 4 days to see how the other team comes back. But yeah, I mean, you got LeBron at Oracle to take on Steph and the Warriors. That's, I think, 7 o'clock tomorrow night. And, you know, for me, that's must watch TV. That's a game I will definitely tune into because it's, you know, the Lakers aren't great, but LeBron on that stage on the road, you know, that's fun to watch. So that's a good match. The other matchups, not that exciting. That one I'll watch.
Yeah, for sure. And it seems like the Warriors have kind of figured things out, too. After a somewhat slow start to their season, they're 8-2 in their last 10 and now sitting at 23-11 on the season.
And Boogie's coming.
Yes, he is.
It won't be long.
Wasn't he supposed to come back right after Christmas when they acquired him?
Yeah, he's playing for the G League team, getting in shape. You know, you come back from an Achilles at that age and that body.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'll be surprised if Boogie is Boogie. You know, maybe as we get to playoff time, he'll start. Kobe is one of the very few players who suffered the Achilles tear. It was a little old. He was a little older when it happened, but he came back not quite like the pre. He was older, but he finished his career with 60 points his last game.
Yes, he did.
He came back, but most players that tear their Achilles never quite come back. And Boogie's a big guy. We'll see if he can do it.
For the sake of the parody of the NBA, let's hope Boogie is just a shadow of his former self.
Yeah,
because
that would be
scary.
They don't need a dominating center to go with that mix.
No doubt. That's all I got for you, Davey. That's four.
Top four at four takes us at 4:15 to our first break of the hour. Two more segments to go. We'll chat some NFL because it's that time of year. We do have Monday Night Football tonight. Oh boy, Broncos, Raiders, 7:15 on the Fan. We'll talk playoffs. We'll talk playoff scenarios, coaching scenarios. Welcome your input. 651-989-5326. Toll free, 800-320-5326. Four segments down, two to go. Sinekin and Donaldson in for the boys on the Fan.
It's a Purple Monday on the Fan, presented by Franson Bank and Trust.
Decorations are all hung by the fire. Everybody's singing, all the bells are ringing out, and it's Christmas all over again. Yeah, again. Long distance.
We're back, 4:22 on a Christmas Eve afternoon. Dave Sinekin in for Barrero today. We're here till 5 o'clock. We will send ourselves on our way at that point and enjoy the holiday. And for those of you out and about getting your last-minute shopping done, good luck. You've waited this long. I think you deserve your fate at this point. We're going to continue to talk NFL now through 5 o'clock. We've been dipping in and out of the subject throughout the program. We started at 2 today. About great streaming shows to watch over the holidays when you may have some extra time. I do this every year because I kind of have some alone time over the next 5 or 6 days. The family heads on a little vacation with grandma and the cousins and the aunts and uncles, and I stay behind and just kind of revel in my bachelorhood for a few days. So lots of great recommendations have come in. I'll recap them at the end of the program, but some new ones that have come in since we last went through some. Jeffrey's recommending Broadchurch. He said, trust me. And I looked at a quick recap. I think it's British show, Boy is Murdered. It's all the how things go down in a small town. That's my kind of show.
Yep, I've watched that one. It's a good one. Yep. I think it's a couple seasons, maybe. Like, there might have been a second season, if my memory is correct, but a couple years old and a very solid show for sure.
All right, so thanks for that, Broadchurch. Is that, do you know, is that Netflix, Amazon?
Netflix.
That's a Netflix one?
Yeah, exactly.
Alan's recommending GLOW. I have watched both seasons of GLOW. I love that show. That's a, GLOW stands for the Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling. It's set in the 80s. It's a TV show. It's the sort of the inner workings of a TV show. Mark Maron, the comedian, is the manager of the girls. It's really well done. Very funny. So yeah, GLOW is a great one, especially if you're into wrestling. It's terrific. Sean gave us a bunch. He's given us Ozark, which is the Jason Bateman show. I've not seen that yet. That one, my wife watched the first season. She loved it.
I haven't watched the second season yet, but I've heard the second's even better than the first, and I really liked the first.
Now, as a guy that it's not going to like drive me crazy, a guy that doesn't love stuff that's too out there, scary.
No, it's kind of like a different take on Breaking Bad, almost. Yeah. I would say it's in kind of cut in that same vein.
All right, very good.
Yeah.
A couple of guys have suggested the Amazon show Jack Ryan, starting not Johnny Athletic, but the other John Krasinski, based on the Tom Clancy novels. Many actors have played Jack Ryan over the years. I like him. So that's one. It's been on my list. I haven't gotten to it yet, but several guys have recommended that one. Sean also mentions The Tick on Amazon, which is supposedly a funny take on superheroes. Short 20-minute episodes, couple seasons. He's a fan of that, so appreciate that, guys. We'll, again, go through the list before we're done for those of you trying to keep score at home. We've talked plenty of NFL. The Week 16 ends tonight with the final game probably ever played in the city of Oakland, which is kind of sad. They don't know where they're playing yet next season because Vegas, I was just in Vegas and saw the stadium. It's got a long way to go, but I think 2020 is when the Raiders will move into their new shiny. It's right off the strip. It's crazy. It's just right there. You know, I would have figured head out into the desert 15 miles, cheap land, but no, it's Vegas, man.
Yeah.
They want you to walk to the stadium back to your casino. So it's pretty cool. It's right in the middle of everything. But yeah, the final game in Oakland, I do think that's going to invigorate the Raiders tonight. Denver's mailed it in. They're done. I think Oakland will win one for the, what do they call it, the black hole?
Yeah, right? The black hole, for
they'll
sure.
Win one for the black hole tonight. I think Oakland's going to win that game. I don't think I'll watch a minute of it. But you can hear it here on The Fan. So
you
please,
certainly can.
Please tune in. That'll end week 16. Then we'll have 1 week left to shake out everything. And one thing that's just kind of struck me, because we put so much attention on the draft, right? And as soon as our teams are out of the playoffs, our focus goes to the draft. And that'll happen in January. We'll spend 3 months just obsessing about who the Vikes will take. Packers have two number one picks, so who they will take. But I was thinking back at the 2018 draft, and I think this year is going to be known as maybe one of the great quarterback years ever, because I think the jury is still out on two of them. I think the Joshes, Josh Allen, Josh Rosen, you know, Allen, since coming back from injury, he's running all over the place, but, you know, I think he needs another year. Josh Rosen, Mike McCarthy may end up in Arizona. I thought Cleveland, because all those front office guys are from Green Bay. Then I thought the Jets, but I think the ownership there is a little hinky. And Arizona sounds like the team, but he won't talk to anybody while there's a head coach in place, which I respect. If McCarthy gets his hands on Rosen, he's kind of an Aaron Rodgers, you know, kind of cocky, arrogant, thinks he's the smartest guy in the room. And McCarthy might be able to relate to that. I mean, you can knock him all you want, but I know that Rodgers, in a quiet moment, without too many people listening, we'll give McCarthy a whole lot of credit for helping him become the quarterback. There's a reason he was drafted 23rd, 24th. I mean, a lot of people questioned his mechanics and a lot of things, and McCarthy really did a lot to develop. So I think he and Rosen might work well, but I don't know who Rosen is yet. I know he beat my team. It's one of the few teams he was able to beat. But the other three guys, I don't think there's any question about Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold, or Lamar Jackson. A smaller body of work for Jackson because he's only played 5 or 6 games. But I think all those guys have it. I think that those teams and organizations that have been waiting for, not Baltimore, not so much. They had Flacco and he won them a Super Bowl. But for sure, Cleveland and the Jets, they have their guys. Darnold, I mean, I liked him at Southern Cal. He just looked the party so big. Watching him yesterday, and he had a great game the week before against Houston. He threw like 70%, 270 yards, 2 touchdowns, no picks. Now, Green Bay was down 8 starters on defense yesterday, and so there were a bunch of guys in there that aren't great. But he looks every bit like a franchise quarterback to me. Jeremy Bates is his offensive coordinator. If they blow Todd Bowles out and bring new coaches in, you know, I don't know how that'll affect him going forward. But there's no doubt in my mind that those three guys are going to be leading their organizations for the next dozen years or so. And I'll be curious, you know, as the years go by, see how winning, you know, they had to win to be thought of as all-timers. But I have a feeling like the 83 draft that had, you know, Marino and Ken O'Brien and Elway, and just, there were a number of great quarterbacks in that draft. This feels like one of those years again. I don't know about you, but all three of those guys to me are lock solid, really, really good starting quarterback.
I was just going to compare it to the Eli Manning, Ben Roethlisberger, and Philip Rivers draft.
Yeah, that's a great year, yep.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, those three guys definitely feel like franchise quarterbacks, and I would agree the two question marks are the two Joshes.
And we talked about this earlier. I went through my NFL predictions for the playoffs. I was already, once I got off the air, we went to break, and somebody ripped me for picking Seattle to lose to Dallas, I was already second-guessing that. Because Seattle's already gone into Dallas, and maybe I'm making too much of the fact that can they do it twice. But I really, the more I think about Cleveland at Baltimore Sunday, that's probably a late game too, because that's got all the ramifications. They have to win. Pittsburgh has to win. I'd love to focus on that game. I want to watch Baker Mayfield go into Baltimore in a must-win situation for the Ravens and see how he handles that. Because this is a whole different animal.
That is a 325 start. Yeah, the Browns and Ravens, 325.
All right, so there's 8 games, and the Vikes, of course, play. There'll be a lot of flipping around for those of us fortunate to have the Sunday ticket. But I really want to watch what Baker Mayfield does. This is a great test for him in the perfect situation for Cleveland, right? Because, you know, they'd love to knock Baltimore out of the playoffs. If they lose, all right, so you move up a couple spots in the draft. No big deal. No one expects you to win. Haven't seen the early line. I would think Baltimore is a touchdown favorite, I would think. So they're not expected to win, but I think that's going to be a close game. I think everyone's going to be all over Baltimore. Look what they did in L.A. Look how they're peaking. Look at Lamar. Look at that defense. And I have them in my Super Bowl right now, even though they may not make the playoffs.
Ravens are 5.5-point favorites.
5.5. Yeah, it's less than 7. That might inch up a little, but it probably won't get that far. I think Cleveland keeps that one close. I think this is a great stepping stone for Baker Mayfield. They have so much confidence right now. And, you know, they've got, look, they've been as bad as they've been. They've got a lot of talent on the defensive side of the ball, right? I mean, you look at those pass rushers they've added, and then Denzel Ward on the back end. That defense is getting better and better. And Baltimore offensively doesn't frighten you. They're different because they run the ball so much. But I have a sneaking suspicion Baltimore is going to have to work really hard against Baker Mayfield on Sunday.
I think you're absolutely right.
All right, 4:31, we will step away one final time, come back for our final segment today, a bumper-to-bumper with Barrero, and then Christmas Eve gets started in force. One more segment for Sinekin and Donaldson right after these.
You're listening to The Fan.
Much better. You know, this is Christmas. This is Mariah. This is...
Well, you got to save the best for last.
Yeah, very nice. We had the Carpenters in there. We had some slow, very beautiful, but this
kind of set the vibe a little bit.
I like it. Ryan Donaldson, Dave Sinekin, final segment for today's Bumper to Bumper / Common Man program. We started at 2 today. We appreciate, again, Johnny Athletic, John Krasinski joining at 2:30. We talked Wolves with their win over the Thunder, as well as his just terrific article on what Devin George, Minneapolis's own Devin George, has been up to better his neighborhood growing up by building affordable housing. A must-read article if you subscribe to The Athletic. Then at 3:30, Spencer Tollickson on his way to Mom's house for Christmas Eve dinner. We talk Gopher basketball with Spencer at 3:30. We'll dip out at 5 o'clock. We'll make way for Best of Barrero. So that's pretty sweet. 5 to 6:30, 90 minutes of that. Then it's Vikings Rewind with Nordo taking you back to yesterday's stirring, as PA calls them, the surging Vikes, who have knocked off somehow the Dolphins and Lions back-to-back. Vikings Rewind. I can't help but take a shot, can I? It's Christmas Eve. Can I just be nice?
I'm just going to fire back with this.
Yeah, very good.
That's all I got.
Do we have the sad trombone Vikings horn?
I don't know.
That one.
I haven't seen that one on the button bar.
Funny. I had it on there at one time. So that's at 6:30, taking you up to Monday Night Football on 100.3 FM. The Fan. Raiders, final home game, taking on the Denver Broncos. And then there'll be 16 games left in the NFL season. It will all be over. Before I say goodbye, we'll run through some of the streaming programs folks have recommended that you check out. If you're home, TV time, can't watch every bowl game, Netflix, Amazon, Hulu, we'll run through some of those before we are done as well. The Vikings will prepare now for the Chicago Bears on Sunday. And I said this earlier, to me it's a fascinating scenario because the Bears are probably a couple years ahead of schedule. Nobody saw them go worst to first in the NFC North. They're kind of playing with house money, as we like to say. But they've got to feel like they have a real opportunity. I mean, last year nobody expected the Eagles to climb to the top of the mountain. Defense travels. They haven't played great away from home, barely beating Arizona, barely beating San Francisco yesterday. If not for a turnover late, which went right off the fingers of a receiver, they might have been trailing late in that game. That might have changed everything, but things have kind of fallen into place. And the teams ahead of them, the Saints and Rams, have not exactly surged to the finish. I mean, the Saints certainly came back and won yesterday, I think thanks to a couple of calls that were a little iffy. And if Juju doesn't fumble, who knows how that ends. The Saints have not looked unbeatable. And the Rams, you know, Gurley's out now. Speaking of which, I feel for Charch a little bit. He just tweeted out a couple bottles of bourbon that he's going to enjoy. He's a connoisseur of fine bourbon. And I'm guessing that his Twitter timeline had to drive him to drink because, look, those guys do, and I've said it for years, I don't think there's a better fantasy football show in America. The national shows cannot touch the guys that do Fantasy Football Weekly for what they do and the homework they do. And just it's just a great show. But you put yourself out there on Saturday by telling the Rubes, here's what we think is going to happen. Like bench Aaron Rodgers yesterday. And Rodgers had the second best day for a quarterback all season. And that's just a tough take. And so he was getting hammered by folks that, you know, Gurley's found late to be inactive. And they had said, you know, it might be a great spot. If Gurley is not playing, Rob Kelly becomes Gurley. And, man, grab him if he's available. Because suddenly if Gurley doesn't play, well, then we know what happens, right? C.J. Anderson, who I didn't even know he was still in the league. I had no idea.
Nor did I.
167 yards and a touchdown, maybe two. I didn't check it that closely. But the Rubes just went all off on Charge. And that's just it's a tough spot to be in. And I feel for him because, I mean, they do as much work. I mean, he's on every sports station in America trying to give takes. And when you don't give people the information on championship weekend, I can't imagine what that was like for him. So I feel for him. I hope that bourbon is, you know, 12 years, you know, resting for this moment to pop that top.
Yeah.
Because that's that's a tough spot. I mean, it's not like afterwards they can go through and say, yep, we hit on this one, we hit on that one. Sorry about telling you to bench Rodgers. That probably wasn't the smartest. I tried to tell them, by the way.
Did you?
Well, I mean,
coming from you, though.
The Packers were winless on the road, okay?
Yeah.
There's never been a Packer team go 0-8 in a season on the road. You think Rodgers wants that designation under his resume? He was playing to win that game. He was going to do everything he could. No Aaron Jones. They got to throw the ball. Now, Jamal Williams had a great day, too, but that take was a bit flawed. But I understand it. You know, from afar, you say, what do they have to play for? Why does he care? You know, he might get hurt early a little bit, and they'll sit him down. No, that's 442 yards later. But I just want to say, on the record, those guys do a great job. So they'll lighten up, everybody. You know, I always have said this for, I've been playing fantasy football since 1983, Dan Marino's rookie season. I was not smart enough to draft him. The guy that did won the league. Nobody saw it coming. I always, the one part of the show I don't love is the lightning round where, you know, should I start Nelson Aguilar or Cooper Kupp? You know, shouldn't you make the call? I mean, that's the whole fun of fantasy football is you're making the decision. Now, yeah, it's nice to get a bit of advice. I get it. But to then blame those guys for leading you astray, lighten up, Francis. I mean, get a life. They're taking their time to try to give you an educated guess, but nobody knows. Nobody knew Sean McVay had C.J. Anderson in his back pocket, and he was going to run that guy 20 times for $167. And unless you are in L.A. and you're following that team that closely where you know it might be a possibility, I say, you know what? If you take shots at those guys on Twitter, shame on you. Play a different game. Ask somebody else for their advice. Charge, I understand why you're breaking out the top-shelf bourbon. Because I looked at a bit of his Twitter timeline, and oh, my goodness.
And for every John Kelly, C.J. Anderson miss there is out there, Charge hits on about 99 out of 100 of them. And how many times has he made those Rubes money in the past and winning their leagues, helping them out? So kudos to Charge and all the hard work he does.
Yeah, I mean, I'm serious about this. That show deserves a much bigger stage because you listen, and I have some serious XM, and I'll listen to other fantasy shows, and they're just a joke compared to what these guys do and the, you know, the take a chance and the sleepers, and just they do a great job, and they deserve a little kudos and not getting hammered as they know they were. I want to catch up on some back stuff here. Spencer Tollickson getting hammered by a couple Badger fans. Spencer made the comment, as the Gophers get set to resume the Big Ten season at Kohl Center next Thursday night, Spencer mentioned, you know, good luck getting a call in the Kohl Center. And I heartily agreed. I go to the Indiana game there whenever they play there, and I'm astounded by the fans that just every call that goes against them is just the worst thing in the world. And got a couple tweets from Badger fans. Spencer, this from Dave. Spencer whining about officials is pretty rich. Try to get a call in the barn. I don't go to enough calls. I know it's, you know, you're always going to feel that way when you're the other team, I guess. Carl, who's an IU alum like me, but also a Badger fan, said, you're out of your mind if you think IU doesn't intimidate refs. Bobby Knight got every call there for 30 years. It's known as the Hall of Calls for a reason. All right, so back in the day, I'm not going to argue that at all. Officials getting that Bobby Knight stare down, and maybe that's what it is. The intimidating coaches probably do have a serious impact on officials. You know, ever since, like, going back to Indiana, Mike Davis, Tom Crean, Archie Miller, those are not coaches that intimidate refs. So Spencer said, for his money, that's the most educated fan base when it comes to playing on the road in the Big Ten is in Bloomington. Maybe it was different back when I was there in the early 80s when Joe B. Hall's on one side and Bob Knight's on the other, and good luck to any official not getting, you know, pissing off either coach and dealing with the intimidation factor. But the truth is, I'm so excited for this Big Ten season because I think, yeah, there might be 9 or 10 teams that make the tournament. Every single road game is going to be a test. I even put Rutgers in there. I understand it's not like going to West Lafayette or Ann Arbor, but I think it was Michigan State that went into Rutgers, and it was a game until the final moments. Indiana went to Penn State and was trailing most of the game, got a couple buckets late to steal the win on the road. Any win this year away from home is like a golden ticket, and you have to try to win every single home game. I know I'm not breaking news there, but it's going to be so competitive in the Big Ten this year. Right now, Michigan is seen as a top three, top four team, and they may be by far the best team, but they're going to struggle, and they did struggle. They almost lost to Northwestern on the road in early December. I just love Big Ten basketball, and to think that we have, you know, Christmas, New Year's, all the bowl games, and then next week it all starts up, Big Ten basketball, with just, you know, one night after another, you're going to see really fun matchups. The most I'm worried about my team is free throw shooting. Indiana cannot shoot free throws. And as close as I know all these games, and they've gotten away with it, they're 10-2, and they've had to play Duke, Arkansas on the road, both of those on the road, Louisville on a, and then Butler on neutral courts. So they're battle tested, but they're shooting like 63%, and that's going to cause you to lose Big Ten games. And I think Indiana starts with 3 of 4 on the road in tough places. I think Michigan, so Indiana might get off to a rocky start, but I just think it's one of those years where, yeah, maybe Michigan or Michigan State separates, but it might be 5 losses that win the Big Ten this year. So that all starts up. We'll have Gophers Mount St. Mary's Friday night on the Fan, and then the Gophers will tip it off in Madtown next Thursday. All right, final few. What we got? A couple more minutes?
Yeah, we got a couple minutes.
All right, let me run through again some of these streaming recommendations. Thank you, gentlemen and ladies, for sending in all these shows. Again, the backstory is, my family heads down to Costa Rica Wednesday for 6 days without me, with grandma, with aunts, uncles, cousins, and I take the opportunity to stay home to do my radio shows, hang with my dog, watch bowl games, and I'll pretend I'm back in my 30s and I'm single for 5 or 6 days. Chance for me to reboot as well. So I'll watch a lot of Netflix and Amazon and that kind of stuff, and always looking for recommendations. I'll run through just a bunch of titles. One thing I will throw out there, I do like cooking shows. I'm a big Top Chef guy. The Great British Baking Show. I can't explain because it's, if you watch it, it's so upbeat and old-fashioned. And really, there's no controversy. There's no Simon Cowell-type judge that rips people. It's just great television. And I'm in season 3. I watched it with my youngest son, Dylan, and It's just great TV, and it's mindless, but it just makes you feel good. So we're going to rip through a bunch of shows that are about crime and sci-fi and death and murder, But if you just want something totally 180, the Great British Baking Show is really a fun show.
Is that on Netflix?
That is on Netflix.
Okay, sweet. I'll check it out.
There's 6 or 7 seasons. I think they're on season 3 right now. I really enjoy that. Okay, so we've got Bird Box, the new one. That's pretty new on Netflix, right? That's the...
I think it just released yesterday.
Is that right?
Yeah, I believe so.
Oh, and I'm also... I mean, for number one on my list with a bullet, which I will watch Wednesday night after the Gopher game. No, I won't, because it's poker night. Thursday night is Springsteen on Broadway. Cannot wait to watch it. I'm even contemplating going and getting a soundbar for my TV. Just to... I've always put that off.
And it might be worth it.
It's time to experience Bruce in my home doing that show. Uh-oh. You only got a minute?
Got a minute.
I need that guy that used to do the FedEx commercials where he talked really fast.
Sure.
Bird Box, Last Kingdom, Altered Carbon, Vietnam War, the Ken Burns movie, Wrecking Crew, The Kominsky Method, Sunderland Till I Die, Dark Matter, Dark, Archer. I'll throw in Big Mouth, another animated series that's just...
Hilarious.
Hilarious.
So raunchy.
Raunchy, profane, but
yeah,
so funny.
It is funny.
Killing Eve on BBC America. I really enjoyed that. Glow, I've also watched. I recommend that. Broadchurch, Ozark, Jack Ryan, The Tick, and Mindhunter from Grumgal came in late about the beginning of profiling of criminals with the FBI. All those shows get the bumper-to-bumper seal of approval. That's it for Ryan Donaldson and me, Dave Sinekin. Have a wonderful, wonderful Christmas. Enjoy the holiday with your family and loved ones. Good night.
Oh, it doesn't show signs of stopping.
You're listening to The Fan.